We could replace our number of contracts or reduce the number of contracts that we have by 60 to 75. Well, how are we going to do that? We have several parts contracts, and it doesn't matter if it's a $20,000 contract, $40,000 contract, or a $200,000 contract. We still have to go through that same long process. We have contracts for wiper blades, batteries, brake pads, heavy equipment parts, and there's got to be a better way to do it, and this is the answer. What we've seen, what I've seen, and a lot of research that we have done, is that this method has increased BEP participation by 30 to 35%. Now, let me just take a time out and remind everybody what BEP is. In the construction engineering world, that's the MBE and DBE programs. In the goods and services world, it's called BEP, Business Enterprise Program, that CMS manages, okay? So they manage that whole process. I just thought it was important to point this out, and in doing that research, you know, we determined that the majority of those vendors that did have those $20,000 contracts for parts, they're not BEP vendors. There's no goals on those contracts. So we believe this is a great avenue for additional opportunities to BEP firms that don't exist today. Okay, we're excited about this, and I know other jurisdictions have been very successful with this implementation. What else can this do? Eliminate obsolete parts. We retire some heavy equipment or some sort of a salt truck or whatever it may be. The parts that we have stocked on our warehouse, they're obsolete. They're no good for us anymore. What are we going to do?
We own them.
Yeah, we own them. We're stuck with them. So then it's a challenge. We have to go through a process to get rid of these parts. Whether we put on the state's IBID site or however we get rid of it, it's a process that we have to go through. And, you know, I know, like I said, we don't pay for these parts until the part crosses the counter. And I know our chief of finance, Mike Kelch, definitely likes that we don't have to pay for these parts in advance and have them sit in the warehouse. It also reduces our transaction costs and processing time. Instead of spending all that time in managing 40, 60, 70 contracts, we're managing one contract. We're paying one invoice. A lot easier to manage the vendor. Processing time of the invoices get turned around much faster. And what I really like too, it increases my buyer productivity. Instead of wasting so much, I don't want to say wasting, but instead of spending so much time on these routine commodity-based contracts that are low dollar amounts, I'd rather have them be focused on the critical procurements that are really important to our agency. I think the time is better spent there than in these routine commodity parts contracts. So that's vendor managed inventory.
John, can I ask you a question about that?
Sure.
Are there other board members who want to ask something?
So I guess I need to visualize this. This is a company whose business is the interface between people who provide the kinds of goods that we need and us, right?
Right.
So is this a competitive market? Are there a lot of vendor-managed inventory companies out there so that we're going to be able to get good pricing on this?
Yes. I you know, through my research, there's more than a handful of these firms that provide this service. And they're all expert. And I'm glad you brought that up, Chairwolf, because, you know, the buying power that these firms have is so much larger than what we would buy, and they could attract, you know, better volume discounts from these manufacturers. They go straight to the manufacturers and negotiate prices because they're doing this for several jurisdictions, the city of Chicago, and I know CTA and Cook County is piggybacking off of their contract, Indiana Department of Transportation, City of Boston, City of Detroit. So these firms are definitely getting the best prices for us, okay?
As part of that process, do they then purchase the existing inventory?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. They purchase all of it. So as soon as they come in, if our vendor would get hired, sign the contract, bring them on, then step number one, they'd purchase all of our inventory.
Or I would imagine have fulfillment orders where people need to turn around quickly, but we don't have to keep it on our shelves. I mean, one of the things that John isn't mentioning, but to his credit, you know, when he first started as chief of procurement, we asked him to go through a pretty lengthy process with the warehouse, and you know, we frankly found a lot of, you know, materials on our shelves that were obsolete. You know, they were for automobiles that we didn't have anymore, or trucks that we didn't have anymore, because of course we keep a stock of those things to make sure that we have them when we need them. So, you know, this is really, in addition to, you know, what we think would be very competitive pricing from the vendors, although, you know, there aren't dozens and dozens, there are, you know, a number that we would hope to be competitive here. we think that the efficiencies that it's going to create for our staff and for our department are critical, really. And, you know, if we really are going to move the needle on this problem and not come and complain to you every month about how long the procurement process takes, although we reserve the right to do that still, you know, I think we just have to think differently about the way we run the organization. And John has risen to that challenge in developing this proposal.
Yeah, and, you know, and the other one applies to job order contracting, which I'll get into on the next slide, but in talking to procurement people at the national level, other states are doing this, building efficiencies in their process, saving costs both hard and soft, and it's a win-win situation, that's for sure.
How does it change the relationship between the parts manager and the mechanic at that level? I mean, does he come in and just make a request like he normally does now? Is there some sort of special request that's got to go in and get approved? I mean, it doesn't have to go through the procurement process, I hope, but I mean...
No, we would generally...
What do you do in-house?
We would generally have to enter the need in our SUN system like we do today, and once that's approved by the appropriate chief and Christie, if the dollar amount's high enough, then that's their authority to go ahead and put that request in to fulfill that order.
Do they come on-site and run the parts department?
Yes, they do.
Okay, so they'll have the inventory in each of the places they are today, and then... It's just the mechanic going up instead of talking to a IDOT employee, he's talking to a vendor employee?
Right. Yes, that's correct.
That they're actually interfacing directly with the vendor, or our procurement department is ordering from the vendor and we're getting those parts to...
Right, they're interfacing with us and then we're placing the order with the vendor. And then they're grabbing the part off the shelf and then supplying it.
Off their shelf, not off ours.
Oh, so they're bringing it to the facility instead of it being at the facility.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
Is there some efficiency loss then in that?
No. These are experts. They're experts in the industry.
And I think that we can. What we've seen, I think, in other procurements is that there are time frames that you can establish that are appropriate to make sure that they can fulfill, you know, a part request or requirement within a certain period of time, which certainly would be, you know, as fast as what we're able to do, particularly if the part happens to be, as many of them are right now, something that we are ordering on an expired contract and we have to make some other provision.
You're just talking as a mechanic.
Yep, that you want to make
right
away.
Stand around while I wait for the part to come from.
So I think one of the, it's a very good point that we will need to make sure that there are very clear expectations about how quickly, you know, orders are fulfilled. And, you know, for those critical items that we do have, you know, the ability to have something, you know, the garages will still, you know, have parts. It's not as if there won't be a parts section at all of our maintenance garages, but, you know, this keeps us from having to have, I think, a huge central stockpile at our warehouse that, again, often, you know, if we don't go through it, we own it and it becomes obsolete and we sell it at a drastic discount.
And, you know, and quite frankly, the mechanics, they'll get the parts faster through this process, right? Because through the solicitation, we put our requirements, you know, must supply all parts within a certain time frame, and that's industry practice. It, looking at some of these solicitations and contracts that are already out there, there's, you know, specific measurements in contracts. Say the vendor shall provide 80% of these parts within 1 or 2 business days, and they have a larger network to select these parts from.
Well, I've seen this two ways. I've seen it where they've run the parts department. I've seen them where their job is just to keep the inventory on the shelves for the existing system. So there's, you know, is it one of those two, or is it a combination of both?
I don't know that we've decided. You know, I think we wanted certainly to get, and this is the feedback that we were looking for, because we thought some of you would maybe have some experience with this in your own jurisdictions or from your past lives. So, you know, it's something that we will work on to make sure, you know, really taking a look at how quickly things are needed, you know, and items are needed now, and make sure that any relationship that we have here, you know, our teams out there, particularly at the M site, can get those as quickly or quicker, more likely, than they can get them now. So it's something that we'll look at. I don't know that we've decided, you know, which of those two. I think our initial vision was simply just ordering parts through this contract versus having kind of a team in-house that would actually run some.
So we do have that flexibility.
Run the shop, but we'll take a look and come back to you and let you know how we resolve it.
The city of Aurora has a very large and variable fleet, everything from ambulance and fire trucks to squad cars to backhoes to you name it. And we went this direction probably about 3 years ago, I think, and we haven't seen any downside at all to that. And you know, when you're talking about inefficiencies of parts, you know, and previously we had an emergency, you end up with an employee running out to go grab that part, you know, under this circumstance.
Are they running your, or do they come in and take over your parts department then itself? So from that front desk back is theirs then?
Right.
And did you find that you had to change your sort of quality control to make sure that you were getting what you wanted and that they weren't doing multiple parts? And I mean, a difference between controlling all of this yourself is you know what's on the shelf and you know what people are getting. This feels as if you're sort of one step from that.
Yeah, I think the proof is in the pudding, and I think what we saw before was that there's a tendency to have a huge amount of inventory sitting there. And as we say, at some point that becomes outmoded and it's still sitting there somewhere. Uh-huh. You know, so the idea of not doing it yourself that way, having them responsible, having them respond to a specific demand for a specific part or need makes a lot more sense than just having this large area with shelves that have a huge amount of inventory sitting there.
And maybe I'm not asking the question right. Somebody is monitoring the requests that are coming in.
Yeah, we've got our supervisors would be aware of what the part request was and they would make sure that they...
I can guarantee you that we would definitely hear about it if they were, you know, requesting, you know, part 1, 2, 3 and getting some, you know, cheaper version part 2, 3, 4. We would certainly...
The mechanics
are looking
at that. Okay, so you have to make sure that everybody knows that they can do that. Okay.
Yeah, and to some degree, I think you can control how much aftermarket type stuff you allow as well.
Right.
I think those are the two things you want to monitor.
And that's definitely something that would be in the solicitation. When we'd allow aftermarket, when we allow an aftermarket part, when we wouldn't. And I know we're working with our fleet manager too on that.
Okay.
So that was the goods or commodity-based proposed solution that we have. The next one is our service-based solution, which is known as job order contracting. So this is the second concept. And what is job order contracting? Well, this is a method to accomplish small or medium-sized facility projects that are all competitively bid, firm fixed price, and pre-established unit prices. You know, think of this as one umbrella contract where we can source an immediate HVAC need that we have, a project, electrical, plumbing, repairing guardrail. It's similar to the vendor managed inventory in that you're dealing with one vendor, but there's so many services that can be included under this umbrella. You know, recently, I think it was in July, 100 degrees outside, our HVAC system went on at Plaza 61. What did we do? We had to do an emergency because we didn't have a contract in place. Did we pay a higher cost? Probably. It was an emergency situation. You know, we didn't want anybody to suffer in the toll booth in that extreme heat. So in a job order contracting environment, this is just a tool that's in our toolbox that we don't have to go to unless we really need it. In that situation, if we would have had a job order contract in place, as soon as that HVAC system went out, we could have just placed a task order with this vendor or with the vendor, and they would assign a firm to go ahead and repair you know, what was broken at that site. So we wouldn't have to go through a process. We wouldn't have to pay more money. And again, similar to vendor managed inventory, this again would increase our EEP participation. Again, the contracts that we do have that could potentially be included in this, there really isn't that much BEP participation at all. And we're seeing that the city of Chicago alone is achieving at a clip of greater than 40% for BEP. Again, this is another opportunity that doesn't exist today for BEP vendors. Some of the jurisdictions that have implemented job order contracting, City of Chicago, you know, the CTA and Cook County both piggyback off of the city's contract. You know, our neighbors, the City of Naperville, they have a really good contract, which, you know, their municipal code allows other vendors to piggyback off of their contract. So Downers Grove, Joliet, Lyle, Wheaton, in Hinsdale, all piggyback off of that Naperville contract. It's a large success story over there. Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission, and I believe the job order contracting concept started years ago with the Department of Defense. I think there was an individual from the U.S. military that came up with this concept. And again, similar to vendor managed inventory, you know, we could definitely see similar benefits as far as reducing our transactions cost, processing time, and also increasing our buyer productivity, because we're not trying to put out the fire as it arises. We can utilize this tool if we need to. Okay. So again, those are two of the critical game changers that I believe are the home runs that we were looking for that we currently don't have today that can help us with some of these issues that we've been talking about. Some other, you know, proposed changes that we have for this year: increased staffing. We have five positions that are already approved for the 2013 season. Vendor education. You know, I get calls all the time from vendors. They're confused about this process. They're confused of another process. You know, the CMS has changed the BEP process, you know, which is a good thing, but vendors need to be educated on all this. So, you know, Sherry and I are working on bringing in CMS, or bringing all of our vendors in here at the tollway, or just a vendor fair, similar to engineering had a few months ago, and focus on BEP, so have somebody from CMS that's responsible for this program talk about this to the vendors, because there's a lot of questions out there. And also an individual from the CPO's office talk about some of these procurement changes in which they have an authority, a certain authority over certain processes. We want to help educate our vendors, because a lot of times they're non-responsive to basic requirements that they should be getting. And we're targeting the first or second quarter of this year with that initiative. Somewhat external, you know, changes. No SPO approval required now on CMS master contracts. In the past, if we're ordering against a master contract, our SPO needed to approve that transaction. We no longer need that approval. That helps a little bit. The next one is Christy's favorite one, the vendor portal for disclosure forms. So how's that going to help us? Well, the state CPO's office has taken a lead role, as the statute allows them to, in creating a portal for vendor disclosures. We all know how long it takes for these potential conflicts to move through the process. And how will that alleviate the pressure? Well, simply, if a vendor is entering into a procurement, say with IDOT or some other agency, they have to submit these disclosure forms, right? Once these disclosure forms get approved, they get placed in this portal. So say, fast forward to take 3 or 4 months, vendor has another opportunity that they're bidding on another agency, say our agency. Instead of making the vendor go through the ringer again on this process, they just sign a certification that nothing has changed with their most recent submitted set of disclosure forms. We grab it from this portal and move it forward. It doesn't have to get routed through that process. So, but the thing that I know that Christy loves about this is that there's no time frame on this when this has to be completed or where the money's going to come from. So that's a concern, but we're optimistic that that will sort itself out over time.
And I will say that we regularly have meetings with the SPO here internally, of course, and the folks that we have internally, but also, you know, every couple of months with the CPO himself. And, you know, while we, you know, are highlighting here the challenges that we have, they have been and have, you know, attempted to work with us and try to figure this out. And I think this vendor portal is certainly going to be, again, a process solution. I mean, we can all pick up the phone and try to call someone to get something going, or, you know, on these one-off situations. But what we're really trying to focus on here is, you know, what are some process solutions that will actually help reduce our time here so that we don't have to bird dog procurements through what is a very extensive process.
So what was that?
I see staffing increases there you just mentioned. Are those SB 51 driven, basically, would you say?
I would say it's driven to the extent that there's a lot of additional work that didn't exist prior, and we just don't have the bandwidth. It's not sustainable, as you can tell by the number of expired contracts that we currently have. So we do need those resources. Those are critical to us.
Even when you fix the system?
Yes, I believe so. Yes, absolutely.
So, what did you mean by your throwaway lines at the end of your discussion of the vendor portal about the money? I just didn't understand.
Well, I think that there's not right now an allocation or an appropriation to fund work on the vendor portal.
So, and would that belong to us, or that
no,
belongs
that,
to
that
the
this
state?
Is, this would be a statewide or multi-agency tool. So this would be something that I know the CPO's office is working hard with all the agencies to come up with requirements and think through the process. And then this legislative session would be looking for some type of, you know, allocation of funds to actually pay for the development of it. And, you know, certainly something this is the vendor community themselves have been very anxious about, Because right now, every time, even if they haven't changed, they have to submit sometimes the exact same disclosures. They go through the exact same process, and there's not really, you know, a way of, you know, just saying, you know, signing a certification for saying these haven't changed. It's the same as it was before, and having something to refer to. So, you know, it's just one of those things again that will hopefully create some efficiencies. I don't know that we're going to get back to where we were before, but you know, there are clearly also some additional safeguards and protections in the process that are important.
So, are they excited? Vendors excited enough about it that an annual fee might support the creation of the portal?
We can certainly ask that. We can certainly raise that idea. I don't know that I've heard that before, although maybe it's something they have thought of.
I'm talking to some vendors. I'm sure they'd be really excited if they had to pay just a small fee.
Well,
although
yeah,
some vendors don't want to pay anything, right?
Yeah, well, no, I can understand that, but it seems to me it's as much a time saver for them as it is for us.
No, this would definitely make everybody happy.
Maybe the it's a share cost thing. I would just hate to see a good idea stop because of what we know is the budget crunch in Springfield.
Sure. We'll raise it. I mean, it's clearly, you know, somebody else is taking the lead on it, but we'll raise the concept of maybe, you know, there's something here, the development and long-term maintenance that could be supported, particularly the long-term,
yes.
You know, could be supported with some, you know, annual fee that wouldn't hopefully extend so far that, or to such an amount that it would keep people out. But something that, you know, with all of these state vendors, it could be a sizable amount of money
yeah.
potentially.
Okay.
Sure. Any questions?
Other questions for John? Well, thank you. This almost feels like light at the end of the tunnel, but
I just want to emphasize again, I know John and his team have done, you know, a really good job. John and many people here in senior management have done a really good job of kind of rising to the challenge of, you know, what are we going to do to actually change the way we do business to help ourselves see this light at the end of the tunnel. So, good job. Many more steps to go before any
right.
of these things are a reality. But
and if this meeting is like many others, there are probably vendors in the audience who would like to give testimonials on this process, and
sure.
you don't have to do that now. But we feel your pain, and you feel our pain. So thank you for your patience on this. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. And we're excited to endeavor into both of these concepts, definitely.
Great.
All right, thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Christy.
Yes, one more item, and we're very excited about this, and that is that, you know, last night we received word from USDOT and the Federal Highway Administration that they were going to approve the MOU that we need to have in place for the Elgin O'Hare. So if you recall, one of the many, many steps that we need to take was after getting the record of decision that there would be a memorandum of understanding between the tollway IDOT and USDOT, or I should say really I think the FHWA technically, on taking control of that portion of the Elgin O'Hare that is west of 290. So we are very excited with that news. Obviously, it's a major milestone in the project. The governor has been very supportive as our agencies have worked with FHWA and USDOT. He even made a very specific call to Secretary LaHood, and Secretary called him last night to give him the good news. So this has been a long time coming, but we know that it's a major milestone, but it is one of many more steps that are needed in order to get this project to completion. As I've said before, the Elgin O'Hare is really the earliest that the tollway has ever taken on a project in its development. So, you know, there are many steps in this process that we are having to take and deal with and go through that might otherwise have already been done on previous projects. But we think it's very important and, you know, are thrilled with this development and the support that we got from our sister agency here, IDOT, and of course the leadership and support of the governor were critical in this, and we're very excited about it.
So I want to commend Christy and David and the staff and Rocco and the staff that worked on this, because this is, as is always dealing with any government, but I think particularly the federal government, has
yes.
been just a very complicated, detailed process. And Christy flew out to Washington and talked to members of our delegation and people with the U.S. Department of Transportation. I told her she did not have to go to the inaugural ball and dance with anybody to show her support. So she did not do that.
Well, and I it's definitely, and I think you mentioned correctly, you know, it's the team of people that we've had working here, you know, David Goldberg, Ron Muscaro, and Paul Kovacs, and others, Mike Stone, who have really been driving this. So we're thrilled with the outcome, but it was definitely a team effort, and one checked item, hundreds more to go, but we're thrilled. So,
okay, congratulations, and thank you. Any questions on anything on Christine's list? Then we'll turn to the agenda. We'll start with finance.
Finance has four items. The first two were discussed in committee. The last two you did not discuss in committee, so I'd like to take some time.
Great,
to
thank you.
Item three is a resolution which assigns two groups of firms to act as underwriters on two tollway bond issues that were previously authorized by the board. As we discussed it earlier this month, at the January 10th meeting, the board approved a pool of 14 senior managing underwriters and 18 co-managing underwriters back in August of 2012, pursuant to an RFP process that we completed last year. John and his staff procurement have been working with the other state agencies involved in these processes to review and clear disclosures provided by the firms. Currently, all but four firms have completed the process and are eligible to be assigned to these transactions. From the pool of underwriters, the tollway anticipates assigning all firms to serve as underwriters on tollway transactions and expects to utilize all of the members of a pool before utilizing a firm a second time. Balancing and rotating the assignments to build greatest capacity and distribution is also a key consideration that we've utilized in making these transaction assignments. Other factors considered in making these transactions include experience in marketing and underwriting tollway bonds, the amount of capital available to the firm to underwrite tollway bonds, distribution capabilities, and other considerations such as investor outreach and relations and assistance with rating agencies that the firms could provide. So for the first bond issue, it is expected to occur during the first quarter of 2013 in the anticipated amount of $500 million from Illinois' capital program costs. The group recommended for assignment for this transaction include as senior managing underwriters J.P. Morgan Securities and Loop Capital Markets, as co-senior managers RBC Capital Markets and Wells Fargo Bank, and as co-managers Cabrera Capital Markets, KeyBank Capital Markets, Mesero Financial, PNC Capital, Raymond James Morgan Keegan, and U.S. Bank Corp. Investments. There's a total of 10 in the group. For the second transaction, it's expected to be either the funding of the tollway synthetic fixed rate bonds or a second new money issue. The underwriting group recommended for assignment include as senior managing underwriters of Citigroup Global Markets and Barclays Capital. For co-senior managers, BMO Capital Markets and Samuel A. Ramirez and Company, and as co-managers, Fifth Third Securities, M.R. Beal, Oppenheimer, Piper Jaffray, Rice Securities, and Stifel Nicolaus. Again, a total of 10 firms in that group. Finance would recommend approval of these assignments.
So as you may recall, this is something that we had hoped to do earlier in the month, but because of the time that it was taking to get many of these firms through that last stage of the procurement process, we wanted to have as many firms through to choose from as we could. So we did, you know, at your direction, and I think the board agreed with this, held for a couple of more weeks so that we would just have a larger pool to choose from. And I think we have, you know, benefited here in being able to name two complete teams. And I think the thought would be if for some reason we do a refunding, we'll be coming back to the board with a third team to do the second issue. Is that correct?
That is correct. And in fact, I think one also there's potential refunding opportunities for 2005A
the 2006A bonds because of the low interest rates that we, there may be an opportunity there as well this year.
So we may be, there may be one or more transactions, additional transactions where we'll be naming teams, and of course our goal is to use everyone in the pools that are available to us.
And how are you feeling about the fees?
I think the fees are favorable to us. It's about $2.50 per $1,000 of our amount of bonds issued. These are slightly lower than, I believe, slightly lower than the last pool that we utilized, and are, I think, good aggressive pricing for the forward.
Good. Any other questions or any comments on this one? Okay.
Item four under finance is a resolution authorizing up to a two-year extension of the Wells Fargo Bank letter of credit, which supports the tollways $87.5 million series of 2007A 2D variable rate bonds. We've asked the board to act on a renewal of a couple of these agreements previously. I think one was renewed in December, another in February. The primary purpose of this letter of credit is to provide a source of funds to purchase and hold bonds that have been tendered that cannot be remarketed by the remarketing agent. The bank holds the bonds pursuant to terms of the reimbursement agreement until the bonds can either be remarketed or are refinanced or redeemed. As I mentioned, we've renewed similar agreements in recent months, one supporting the Tollways Series 1998B bonds and one supporting the Series 2008A bonds. Additional agreements will periodically come up for renewal during the next year. However, we are continuing to monitor the markets for opportunities to reduce or restructure our portfolio with fixed rate bonds. The requested authorization is for an extension of up to 2 years, provided there's no increase in the per annum cost structure of the facility. Actually, the tollway expects the per annum cost structure to decline. Wells Fargo has proposed a 15 basis point reduction for a 2 year extension for this letter of credit.
15 on what?
From 85 basis points.
85 to 7.
Awesome.
The bank has requested some modifications to the reimbursement agreement to incorporate recent regulatory developments, such as regulations that may be required by Basel III. I think we discussed that last month. The bank is a highly rated bank with long-term ratings of AA3 and AA-, and they also carry the highest short-term rating from all three rating agencies. So Finance would recommend approval to proceed with an extension of that.
Are there questions on this one? Why don't we take these four items on finance then, if that's okay? Chair Peterson, is there anything you want to comment on?
I thought there was some recusal.
Yes, there are. Okay. There's Director Reddick is recusing on the first and on the third, and Director Darcy is also recusing on the third, so we'll take one separate. We'll take each of them separately because they come in a minute. So, may I have a motion for the first, please?
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? And the recusals we've talked about? Any abstentions? On number two, do you hear a motion?
Motion for
second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? Number three?
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? And abstentions? Director Reddick and DRC are recused on that. And number four?
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, thank you. Great, we'll go to procurement now. Thank you.
I don't think there were anything new to add to any of these.
Okay. Any comments from you, Chair?
No comment other than what we discussed earlier.
Okay.
No comment.
Okay.
Are there any questions from any of the board members who were not members of the meeting? Otherwise, we will go ahead and take all five of these items to vote. Okay, may I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, good. We've approved those. Engineering?
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
We have 17 items on the agenda. 12 of them we discussed in detail at the Finance Committee, and they got placed on today's consent agenda. And I have five that I now have completed information on that I'd like to present to the board individually. I also wanted to get back to Director Peterson. He asked one question on item number one. One of the bidders was listed as incomplete. I have some information on that. There's actually three reasons why, and each one of those reasons individually would have forced us to rule this bid as incomplete, but they didn't fill in a price for each line item in their bid, so that would have been, you know, something that we couldn't do anything about. They also did not submit their disclosure forms with the bid, so that's another reason why they were incomplete. And I believe the third reason was, we issued an addendum on this particular contract, which they acknowledged receiving, but they didn't incorporate any of the revised information into their bid. So that was the reason why we listed them as incomplete. So the
Paul, I'm sorry, but before you dive into these, I thought you did a great job at the committee level, just giving us a quick overview, and I think for the directors who weren't there, you can just sort of frame these in, you know, what portions were, maybe you were going to do this anyway, what roads we were looking at, and how you felt the pricing was, and all of that, from a general perspective.
Okay.
Are you going to do that differently?
We were just going to, I think, move forward. Director Peterson mentioned a couple items.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we'll probably give that with the five items you're going to introduce to today.
Yeah.
Okay. Give you an overview on those. Probably incorporate that into this presentation.
Good. Thank you.
So item number two is a construction contract award, and I believe at the committee meeting we didn't have all the information shown, especially for the DBE. We now have it, and it is, they are committing to exceeding our amount. It's the last of our six construction contracts that we have planned for widening and reconstructing on I-90 and that western portion of I-90 between Elgin Toll Plaza and the 39 interchange. They're going to be reconstructing the eastbound pavement in this contract between Cherry Valley and Genoa Road. This is on the Jane Adams. It's about 7.3 miles. We received four bids on this contract. The joint venture of William Charles and Rock Road Company is the lowest at $28,672,756.59, and they've not committed to meeting our DBE goal. We had some discussion, I know, at the special board meeting on the bids that we've been receiving. I am very happy that we are getting this type of competition in this corridor, especially this is the furthest west contract, and we got four bidders on it, so I was happy to see that. We know there were various reasons why the engineer's estimate was out of line with the contract bids. I don't feel that we're at any risk whatsoever because all the bids that we did receive were all interpreting it the same way. So that gave me some confidence. We know that the type of pavement we're using out there is creating more competition, opening up the market a little bit. Our engineer's estimates always average at least 7% above the bid amount, so that, you know, is to be expected. And those were the primary reasons. I think also the way that we structured these contracts, especially with the maintenance of traffic, where we're putting all the traffic on one side of the roadway, and we can do that because we only have two lanes in each direction in this portion of our system, allows the contractor complete access to the portion that they're rebuilding. So they don't have to, you know, shift traffic around one lane at a time as they do on a lot of our other parts of our system. And that definitely definitely figured into the contract prices. I think also the contractors right now, we heard this yesterday even when we had our coordination meeting with road builders, you know, they definitely are looking for work. They're looking to get their people going again, their equipment back in. Being utilized, and they have given us some very good prices that reflect that. I don't know if we're going to be able to enjoy this type of pricing throughout the remaining 14 years of the program, but it's nice to start out, you know, on target.
Good.
I believe the next item that I wanted to go through now was for the contract that we have for professional services. We're describing it as a construction management contract. We advertised for this contract, and it's item number 11 in your agenda. We advertised for it in PSD 12-4. We did get 5 statements of interest. This is the one contract where we had previously tried to find somebody who was independent of the tollway and our work, who could come in with a fresh set of eyes, evaluate our construction processes and procedures, do some testing, and give us some assurances, you know, that we're utilizing the best practices that exist within the industry, that we're getting what we paid for, and it seemed like this is the perfect time to do it, right, you know, before we get into all the work that we're going to have to do in Move Illinois. We did successfully identify this firm. They are completely independent of us. We had a lot of requirements that they had to meet, including certifications that they hadn't worked for us, their employees hadn't worked for us, their subs hadn't worked for us. So we think we got an acceptable firm here. We're happy to recommend award. It's for construction management and quality assurance services. A system-wide award is recommended to building company in an amount not to exceed $1 million. That was our established budget for this. We've concluded our negotiations and discussion on scope. We like the fact that they did propose a non-protege arrangement with the DBE firm, DSR Group, who is also, you know, as I mentioned, new to the tollway. So they're definitely committed to meet and exceed our DBE goal on this contract. I would like to recommend that the board approve this.
Congratulations.
The next item, which I would like to present now that I have all the information, is item number 12. Item number 12 is a contract renewal. This is for our traffic engineer. CDM Smith is the vendor. This renewal is going to extend their services through December 31st, 2014, and the amount of the renewal is $4,287,750. We did bring on CDM Smith for a 3-year initial term. The contract had 2 allowable 1-year renewals. We want to exercise this renewal because we have a lot of additional work that we need them to help us with. And some of that work is they need to provide traffic and revenue projections for these new bond sales, which were not anticipated at the time when we entered into the original agreement with them. They are going to do some traffic and revenue studies for the Elgin O'Hare Western Access in support of those future bond sales. They're also going to be helping us conduct some customer surveys for the I-9 corridor and also on the Elgin O'Hare. They are going to continue to do plan reviews for us, especially with respect to maintenance of traffic and predicting revenue losses associated with our construction contract. That's what they always do, but they're just going to be doing that at a much increased level now because we have more projects going than we originally thought. And they've been doing good work for us. I note that they are not tracking at the goal amount right now with respect to their DBE. However, on their previous contracts, this has never been an issue for us. They do have planned work for the DB subs in 2013, and we know they're going to be on target very shortly, and I don't have any reason not to recommend award of this contract.
Questions on this one?
These are renewals that were referenced in the original contract?
This is the first of the 2 allowable 1-year renewals we had built into the original contract, yes.
And all of these items were in the original scope, but yes. You know, obviously the kind of the quantity amounts are really in the levels of activity. Obviously, not that shift with us.
Item 13 is another item that we did not have complete information on at the committee meeting. This is a request for partial release of retainage on a construction contract. I note that at this time, we now have all the completed information on it. contract is finishing up within budget, and also they're exceeding their BD commitment. And we see no reason why we cannot allow the partial release of the retainage and a reduction in retainage to only $100,000 now. It's on contract, construction contract 4036, which we have with current contracting company. And they did some of the advanced shoulder widening work on I-9 in Virginia and Memorial Cody. The last one is a final release of retainage, and this is on contract 5569, which we have with Laura Construction Company. This is the contract where they reconstructed...
Number 14.
Yes, item number 14. This is a contract which they rebuilt those two ramp bridges that we had at the large system interchange near O'Hare Airport. They did a great job on that. In fact, they won some awards for that. They are on track with respect to budget. They exceeded the BD goal, so we're happy with the work that they performed and we've accepted that. So we are recommending releasing the retainage.
Particularly, too, there's quite a few contracts in here for design upon request, which you were able to unbundle some of these so we could award you some of them. Companies that haven't done work, or some of the smaller companies and minority companies to participate. That's to your credit to that.
And I think these upon request contracts also, as John did a great job of describing a lot of the procurement challenges that we face. So these upon request contracts are going to allow us to have a little more flexibility on addressing some of the unknowns that are going to pop up. For smaller type work, usually we assign the work on a task order basis. It's usually bridge repair. If we get a bridgehead, you know, we can utilize this contract to do the design for us so that, you know, we can put the bridge back in service as soon as possible. It's nice to have these type of contracts. We were able to bring them to the board quickly. We just did the selection for these services on PSB 12-5, which was just December 19th. They're upon request, so they have established upper limits that we have already included in our budget. We've been focusing on delivering the tasks to these companies as soon as possible, so we have a backlog of tasks, so we're ready to assign them as soon as we get them notice to proceed. They are definitely looking forward to the work. It does give us the opportunity to utilize or try out some new firms. We had great responses on PSB 12-5. 85 firms submitted 149 statements of interest. So there's still a very large group of companies competing for our work on the professional services side. Fortunately, we still had 5 disqualified firms. One did not have a Board of Election certificate. So we did, the legislature did correct that so that it's, you know, they just have to have it, and we can check online to make sure that they have it and not disqualify them any longer. But they actually weren't aware that that was a requirement. So that firm was disqualified too.